The following speaker is Professor Luigi Vero Tarca. He's full professor of theoretical philosophy at the Ca' Foscari University in Venice. He will be giving a talk entitled Logos and Dialogue.
Thank you very much to all of you. Logos and Dialogue, for a philosophical interpretation of Panikkar's thought. Panikkar is famous for his proposal of interreligious intercultural dialogue. At the core of this proposal, there are relations between religions, but here I shall try a comparison with the philosophical position, which is defined by his reference to logos, to truth. More precisely, I shall try to apply what he can call the Panikkarian method, the dialogic dialogue, to this problem, i.e. to the problem of the relation between religious dialogic Panikkarian perspective and philosophical thought, i.e. and philosophical truth. The problem is that it seems that truth cannot dialogue. Logos cannot dialogue. Because truth is defined by the very fact that it is the negation of the mistake. And this is undeniable from the logical point of view. True is the negation. Truth defines itself as the negation of mistake. And truth must not dialogue with mistake. If truth would dialogue with mistake, it should be no longer truth. So here we have a very particular situation. We have, so to speak, a dialogue between truth, which cannot dialogue, and the dialogic position. You are lucky enough to have the transcript of the dialogue which took place in Venice on March the 19th, 2004, with Emanuele Severino, which I consider one of the most relevant Italian philosophers. Here I have the book in Italian, which reports this meeting, this conference between this dialogue, we could say, between Severino, between Panikkar and Severino. I was the chairman of that conversation between Panikkar and Severino, and I have contributed with a brief introduction and the philosophical essay to the publication edited by Milena Carrara Pavan. The title of the book is translated into English, Are We Talking About the Same Reality? Towards a Dialogue Between East and West, Raymond Panikkar Converses with Emanuele Severino. One of the aims of my paper is to show how Panikkar's thought is of the higher philosophical level, albeit it has features that make it difficult to recognize him as a philosopher. I believe that also from the philosophical point of view, Panikkar is a great thinker. Therefore, I am sure he's a great philosopher. So the aim of this paper is to show in which sense Panikkar's thought can give a great contribution to philosophical thought on this point. Logos and dialogue, a dichotomy, we are used to contrast logos and dialogue. In the present time, the first term, logos, has prevalently a basically negative meaning, while the second, dialogue, has a completely, a fully positive one. opposing Raymond Panikkar's thought, which is largely oriented towards a dialogic perspective, the dialogue plays a very positive and important role. And it is true that in his perspective, the logos, at least meant as logic and even reason, has to be subordinated to another dimension, that of myth or faith or mysticism and the like. The first, logos, truth, we could say, seems to be dogmatic and authoritarian. The second, the latter, on the contrary, is usually seen as liberal, pacific, submissive, obedient, passive, and thence non-aggressive, non-assertive, non-violent. So it seems that we are here dealing with the dichotomy logos-dialogo. But we know that wisdom, and Panikkar's one in particular, warns us from the risks of dichotomous logic, the logic that contrasts one term to another and then put them in a hierarchical ranking or even considers the one as the good and the other as the evil. If we want to be coherent with the very Panikkarian wisdom, we have to try to be suspicious of this dichotomous stance too. So, a personal recollection, 15 years ago, Raymond Panikkar was discussing in Venice with an important Italian philosopher, Massimo Cacciari. At a certain point, during a courteous but firm discussion, his interlocutor said he was in complete disagreement with Panikkar. In answer, Raymond said that instead he, Raymond, was perfectly understood what his interlocutor couldn't agree with him, but that nevertheless he himself, Raymond, agreed with his interlocutor. This is very interesting. And particularly interesting is the fact that in 2004, the same event happened with Emanuele Severino. I quote from the book. "I feel at one with Severino," Panikkar who is talking. "I feel at one with Severino. I agree with Severino, really. And I feel that he cannot agree with me. And the other is a gap. There is a difference. We have to overcome this contradiction by not reducing thinking to logical thinking, to coherent thinking." Here we are, end of quote. Here we are dealing with an asymmetric situation. The first dialogue agrees with the other, but the second, the latter, does not agree with him. So it seems that this asymmetry leads to a contradiction. Moreover, this asymmetry leads, so it seems, to a victory of the logos. I express this point in this brief way. The truth, so to speak, of the logos may say, if you agree with me, then since I think that I am right and you are wrong, you agree that I am right and you are wrong. You agree that you are wrong, so you are in contradiction. This is one of the points with which we have to think when we treat these problems. I believe that Panikkar is perfectly aware of this position and of this contradiction. Indeed, he says that there is a contradiction which must be overcome. He recognized that this is a problem. Nevertheless, he holds his position, so we have to understand why he behaves in this way. If we think that Panikkar's position stance is not blatantly contradictory, we have to assume that Panikkar's agreement itself is different from an ordinary agreement. Such an agreement, indeed, does not mean whatever you, Severino, say, I shall repeat your sentences and I shall subscribe them, but rather, I fully understand all of what you are saying. In addition to this, I understand the reasons why you say so. And beyond that, I do not fight against what you are saying, and I recognize its importance. Moreover, in some sense, I even recognize the truth of what you are saying. Nevertheless, my position is quite different from yours. Panikkar refrains from denying Severino's stance. Nevertheless, the two stances are quite different. Panikkar does not simply repeat Severino's sentences. He presents a different perspective. He compares Severino to Don Quixote and so on. Here, I can't read the passage, but he emphasizes the fact that that Panikkar's perspective is quite different from Severino one. Nevertheless, he says that he agrees with Severino's position. We see in these words Panikkar's effort to fully agree with Severino. Panikkar understands the reasons why Severino criticizes the technique, Western thought, and so on. Nevertheless, his position is different. Panikkar says that we cannot accept the premises of the discourse with which we don't agree. The problem is that here the situation is very singular, since such disagreement between Severino and Panikkar consists in the fact that the dialogue agrees with Logos, while Logos disagrees with dialogue. So the premises which have to be eliminated are the premises that dialoguing consists in negating the position of the other, of the interlocutor. Only in this way, Panikkar can avoid the contradiction. Indeed, a great part of Panikkar's speech is meant to avoid the contradiction and hence to avoid a simple contrast between his position and Severino's one. Since Panikkar's position, at the first glance, shows itself as a contradiction, we have in some way to legitimate contradiction. We have to explicitate in which sense we can speak of a legitimacy of contradiction. With regard to this point, someone could think of Hegel, but Panikkar's stance is quite different. Hegel's philosophy obeys the dialectical logic. It is the logic of sic et non. His position, Panikkar's position, is different. It does not imply a dialectical overcoming of contradiction, because it does not imply a necessary solution of contradiction, but rather it shows the possibility of a dimension free from contradiction. We are used to assume that if there is a contradiction, then no logos and no dialogue are any longer possible. Contradiction is the annihilation both of logos and dialogue. But Panikkar states, I quote, "You could say, in this case, when there is a contradiction, no dialogue is any longer possible. And yet, even though it is not possible, we are dialoguing." This, end of quote. This shows that Panikkar's thought is a sort of art of the impossible. When there is a contradiction, no logos or dialogue is no longer possible. Nevertheless, we are dialoguing. You are dialoguing exactly on the very fact that the dialogue is impossible. And this transforms, in my opinion, the meaning of all the words we are using. The word position, dialogue, and negation. This is the very point. When there is a contradiction, all the meanings in play are put in discussion and are modified by our discussion. Again, on page 22, Panikkar claims the right to a thought which is in somewhat of an Eastern origin that refers to possibility rather than to necessity. If something is necessary, when is impossible its negation, when its negation is impossible, then Panikkar's view is rather than that of necessity, that of a radical possibility, a radical freedom. I quote, it has been claimed the impossibility of the unchanging, the immutable. I agree, but my Indian position is what? Impossible, but why? Reality has to be the dance of what is possible, the dance of possibilities. I think the dance yesterday of Nuria, which has something to do with this discourse. Why has reality to bend to the rules, to the models of the more rigorous thought? We are afresh back to Parmenides, impossible. Moving from impossibility to unreality is an arbitrary, groundless step that for the West is obvious, but in the East is not so. End of quote. We see that, according to Panikkar's interpretation, necessity is the realm of thought, and the core of his teaching is that reality transcends thought. Therefore, reality transcends necessity. So, in Panikkar's interpretation, we can say that contradiction in reality is only contradiction. In other terms, contradictio is contra against dictio, not against being. It is against speech, discourse, not against reality, against being. I quote, contradiction is contradictio. It is not contra being. Hence, contradictio cannot be said. But to say that what is the same as one can say? Who said that reality obeys the principle of non-contradiction? That principle must be respected. In its field, at its camp, is that of diction, of saying, principle of contradiction. Otherwise, all talk is meaningless, but not against being. Being is not identical to the logos, to the diction, to the word. I think it can express itself rationally or irrationally. End of quote. So contradiction refers only to speech, not to reality. This seems to be the solution of the problema. Nevertheless, here there is a huge problem, because if we interpret that logos is the law of reality by virtue of which everything, attention to this formulation, to this phrase, everything is what it is and not another thing, we could observe that just the Panikkarian distinction between the field of speech and the being obeys exactly that logical philosophical principle. In other words, just in order to claim the validity of his stance, Panikkar must suppose the principle of logos. Two different realities, two different entities, do not coincide the one with the other. Only on this condition we can claim that Panikkar's stance is true. The field of speech, the field of language, of thought, is not the realm of being. The first realm does not coincide with the latter. Indeed, just this is the objection Severinus moves against Panikkar's stance. He resorts to the metaphor of net and sea. The net amounts to the conceptual thinking, and the sea amounts to the realm of being. Severino asks, I quote, and now it's Severino who is talking, once we have said that the sea escapes the net, the sea is being, the net is the rationality, Can we say that it does not escape? Professor Panikkar answered, no, it escapes. But if the friends of the sea, who say that the sea exists and escapes, refuse to say that it does not escape, then here is that even in their speech occurs a supernet that envelopes the sea. Because the sea is what is impossible that does not escape, that is. The sea exists in its being the escaping, and does not exist in his being escaping and not escaping at the same time. The supernet is precisely the impossibility of his contradictory existence. So to briefly, when he say that there is a field, the logos, the thought, but behind this there is another field of being or reality, what we want, we are just obeying the law of the logos, which says everything it is what it is and not another thing. So this principle regards not logos only, but reality at all. And this is the very problem with which we have to deal. It is therefore necessary that reality matches the so-called principle of non-contradiction, for which, if the sea escapes, it is impossible it does not escape. And precisely this is the answer of Professor Panikkar. An escaping and at the same time non-escaping sea does not exist. Now I shall try to read an answer of Panikkar who could confront this position. This is a quotation from Panikkar's answer. Does the sea escape? The sea is present. From my point of view, sea does not escape. It is there, and it allows me to dive into it. Why does the sea escape us? It has been said that I cannot deny that the sea escapes, but I cannot deny that the sea does not escape. This, for the sea, is absolutely indifferent. The sea is there, and I am there. And the sea does not escape because it is present. So, okay, I cannot deny that the sea escapes, but it is an irrelevant truth, and as Pascal would say. I believe that you can interpret this passage in the following way. It is only from a particular point of view that you can state that the sea escapes. The sea avoids the net. The sea is escaping or not escaping only from the point of view of the fisherman who cast his net. But from another point of view, for instance, the swimmer's point of view or the tourist's point of view, the sea is neither escaping nor not escaping. Simply, it is there. But I answer, is this answer the sufficient to solve the question? If we interpret that the answer is that the opposition between escaping and not escaping is true only from a particular point of view, and then we have another point of view different from the former, and you afresh we are saying that there are two point of view, each of them is not the other, and we again fall in the net of the contradiction. The following step is this. Raymond Panikkar says, I quote, the opposition, contradiction, to speak against something, the opposition, the difference, is not a contradiction. This passage is very interesting. I pray you to pay attention. The blue, Hispanic speaking, the blue is not non-red. From the only logic point of view, I can also say that blue is non-red. But is it really? It is misleading, because I cannot define the being of blue as non-red. At most, and here I agree with Parmenides, blue is blue. When I think that I see the difference only under the context of an identity, then, from the point of view of reason, yes. From the point of view of intuition, not. So, the blue is blue. Hence, logic says the blue is not red. No, this is only from a particular point of view, that the blue is not red, or the red is not blue. It is noteworthy that here Panikkar, following Heidegger, and after him the whole contemporary philosophical debate, blames for this problem the identity. I think that he should blame instead, or rather, the negation. Indeed, it is just because we interpret the identity as a negation, precisely as the negation of the difference, that when we think an identity, we think it negatively as a non-difference. And conversely, when we think the difference, we interpret it negatively as the negation of the identity. So I would stop this point by presenting the fact that the question, so to speak, is opened. And I pose to you the question, how to solve the problem of the dialogue between a person or a term which says, which doesn't want dialogue because he has the truth, and this truth is undeniable, and who wants dialogue with this perspective. I believe, in my opinion, it's quite clear that Raymond Panikkar strives to build a communication which constitutes itself a practice of non-violence and of dialogic dialogue. I mean, Panikkar not only says that we have to dialogue, but in the real way he dialogue, he realizes a dialogic dialogue. I read some other point. Panikkar, I quote, obviously the point of tension, but I think it constitutes a creative opportunity too, is Professor Severino's tendency to rationalize his approach to reality, as well as my danger, my risk, is the tendency to the existential approach aimed at enjoying, at seeing, at experiencing, at entering into this reality. When I said, with a joke, that I have no desire to go fishing, I did not say that I did not like to enter the sea and swim and enjoy the reality of the sea. These are all metaphors, of course. So here Panikkar says, Severino's speech has runs some risks, but my discourse too runs some risks. And later, I quote, that here is the depth of the West and the depth of Parmenides, the conceptualization, the seeing clearly, this desire to scrutinize. Fantastically, Severino says that it is inscrutable, but that does not leave him in peace, while it leaves me in peace. But both these things are dangerous. He, Severino, runs the risk of anxiety and despair, as he said. I, panicker, I run the risk of indifference and of giving up, and so we complement each other. As symbols of these two wisdoms, I think we only got to touch lightly these points. In fact, neither he nor I are happy and satisfied neither with the West nor with the West. So what I intended to stress was that Panicker's answer is not only a logical answer, but is a logical answer which aims at realizing a dialogic dialogue. In the last part of my speech, I present a proposal of a way of approaching this problem which can show in which sense Panikarian position is really truth in the strongest sense of this term. I mean, we have a dialogue, I said, between truth and dialogue. The dialogue is possible only if even truth is forced, so to say, to dialogue with dialogue. So we have to show in which sense truth itself implies an element, a dialogical element. Let us think, I understand it's this point is rather requires a bit of attention. If we think the most strong idea of truth, we can see that is the idea please, I have to cut some parts of the undeniable truth. The truth is, and this is the definition of truth. Truth is what denies mistake. And if you deny this, you confirm that your truth denies my mistake. So truth is defined as undeniable. It is undeniable because even who wants to deny it, the truth, is forced to confirm it. This is the very reason for which truth cannot dialogue. So it seems that the game is finished. I believe that just here begins the question and the play. If the strength of the truth is that even his negation is forced to affirm it, then this has the following consequence, that if I truly deny something, I contradict myself, because truth denies its negation. But I said that the negation of truth is such that it confirms truth. So if I deny the negation of truth, I deny truth. This means that if truth has a negative form, it is a contradiction. This means, in other terms, briefly, that truth itself, the most strong truth, is a dialogic truth. Dialogic in the sense that if it, the truth, denies its negation, truth itself becomes contradictory. So we have here, we could say, the mother of all dialogue, the dialogue between truth and mistake, truth and non-truth. And there we have again an asymmetry But this time the symmetry is reversed. It is reversed, rovesciata, non so se reversed, okay. It is true that if denies its negation becomes contradictory. So while in the first part of my speech it seemed that the asymmetry between truth and dialogue resulted in a victory of the truth. In this second part, precisely this asymmetry shows the victory, so to speak, of the dialogue, which is a victory just because it is not a victory against something, against the truth. I end my with a quote from Panikkar, which confirm exactly this asymmetry. It's not a passage from a book, but is a personal writing, is a letter he wrote to his friend Enrico Castelli. He writes, Panikkar, I quote, "In front of the technique of violence, isolation, distrust, and exile, I do not feel, nor can I, nor do I oppose an anti-parallel technique, but the A technique that is subjected, obeys, suffers, that triumphs, however, because after death arrives resurrection. Alleluia." That means we have the violence, the technique of violence, the contra-technique, we could say, of anti-violence, but it is not this Riemann's position. Riemann's position is the A-technique, A-dual, Advaita, the A-technique which differs both from the technique of violence, obviously, but even from the technique of anti-violence. Thank you.
Sorry. First, before questions, I propose you the following thing: to stop before communications. In the morning, we had a coffee break. I'm asking for a toilet break of 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. So let's have this discussion for 25 minutes. 5 minutes break, and then we resume the symposium on communications.
Thank you very much. I appreciate very much your talk. But I've got a problem. If truth is necessary, as you put it, then truth is not negating its negation. It's not coming into contradiction. Truth is just simply not accepting its negation. It's dismissing the negation. And that's not it's not the negation of it. It's the dismissing of it. It says, no, there is no negation. That's not my negation. So that I don't think we engage into a contradiction. Well, I don't have this vision of truth. I don't see the, I don't accept necessary truth, etc. But that's my problem. I am now following your argument. And in your argument, if truth is necessary, someone can negate that necessity. That I understand. But truth, which is necessary, cannot negate its negation, but just can dismiss it and say, if truth is necessary, there is no negation of necessity. I'm sorry about that. And that's why I'm not engaging into a contradiction at all, because I don't accept the opposite of me. This would be my argument.
Can I answer him?
It would be good.
I pray you to understand that there are very, very, very difficult questions. And to treat them in English for me is very, very difficult. Nevertheless, I try to explain. Truth is extremely complex. So, truth does not negate. It depends. Here in play is the notion and the meaning of negation. This is my issue. Negation is what is exaggerating. It's never been thought. We cannot discuss, we are anti-dogmatic, we discuss everything, but we never can discuss negation. And this is why there is a reason. Because if you discuss negation, you negate negation and you refer to negation. Even just this is the point. We have to think negation. And then everything becomes nebular, indeterminated in some sense. So, nevertheless, if I say truth does not negate its negation, it depends on what you mean for not. Because if not is negating something, the truth with does not negate its negation negates something, even only its identity with its negation. It's not a joke. It's the real problem. I see. Now I propose a formula. Truth shows that every negation is a contradiction. Shows that every negation is a self-negation. Every homicide is a suicide, but it shows it. It's not it which kills who negates it. So it does not simply dismiss the non-truth. She understands that it is truth only if it is in relation with non-truth. If I simply forget non-truth, I am not truth. Truth has to win, so to speak, the battle, respect with negation. But I use this term because it wins only if it respects its negation. It's clear. But I don't know if this answers your question. Or
you are right. You are right.
No. No. Since everybody is right, you two are right. This is okay.
Thank you, Professor Tarka, for a brilliant paper. And of course, it was a real debate between Severino and Panikkar, so which you have very ably interpreted. Two points just to get the discussion started, and I'm sure there'll be others who have concerns. Just now, one is the equation of truth with the equation, the identification of truth with logos, something that Panikkar himself would deny, because there are clearly other versions of truth that point to different dimensions of truth. So when, for example, Polonius tells Laertes in Hamlet, to thy own self be true, he's not talking necessarily in tightly logical terms of negating a mistake. He's saying, really try to find your authentic being and try to be true to it. And likewise, when we say in astronomy, this is true north, we're not necessarily negating a mistake. We're saying we want, in this realm, certain accuracy. So there's a question as to whether it is quite right to equate, just let me finish, to equate truth with logos, which is a different term, and it's really, as I understand it, the ground on which Severino and Panikkar were debating, and that was your initial starting point, which was the dia logos, and whether logos will allow for dialogue. But then on that very point, on whether logos will allow for dialogue, with your example of the sea and the net, Panikkar's point, as I think you are trying to make, is not that there will be a super net that might catch the sea, but that from the point of view of the sea, which he wants to experience, he simply is uninterested in the question of whether there is a super net. And so the point that you make about the R technique is to say that the whole question of dialogue looks quite different from the point of view of someone who's interested in these other dimensions of truth other than the purely logical one. Because if you play that game, then of course you can say that by the very fact that he has said being is different from thinking, he is following Butler's point that everything is what it is and not another thing. But that is to play the logical game, which is precisely what Panikkar is trying to say, is only one game among many other games. If you look at it from the point of view of being, rather than the priority of thinking, then the sea is quite indifferent to whether there is a supernet or what the sea is what it is. And of course, the fishermen and others can enjoy it in many different ways. So Panikkar was in with his principle of our technique saying, look, sure, all right, in its domain of mathematics and logic and so on, we will give, of course, normativity to the idea of logos. But in saying that being vastly exceeds logos, he's trying to show other dimensions that go far beyond the logical. And so in some sense, you know, I mean, obviously, I think Severino and Panikkar understood each other up to a point. I'm not sure I haven't read the whole dialogue, but at least from what you say, I'm not sure of how much of Panikkar's, let's put it as a category, a sort of more existential approach to this question was something that Severino was altogether sympathetic with. I rather doubt it. So.
These two, thank you very much. Obviously, very important questions. The problem is that here, every meaning is opened. We cannot accept a preliminary no meaning. When you say truth and logos, you divide them. You oppose one to the other. Okay, but distinguish, it means at least the one is not the other, or the one does not coincide with the other. This is precisely the logical principle, that one thing is not the other.
No, I don't think that's correct. To say that something is not quite the same thing as saying that something exceeds or has more dimensions, because in saying that truth has more dimensions than simply the logical, I'm not negating the logical principle. So negation is only one.
I want to say, I am embarrassed because always everybody treats me as a logic. Here, it's not a question of logic.
Yeah.
I would like you to understand, it's not a question of logic. Okay. This is madness. What I am saying, my position, is purely madness from a logical point of view, from the point of view of the manual of logic.
Which is why I like it.
Please. Okay, but when you say, let's suppose that you say, I don't oppose truth and logos, or logos, truth and being. I say it's different. I say being is wider than only logos. So, you say that it is impossible that being, it is not true that being is only logic. And this is the negation of this position. So you obey to the logical law of reality, which says that truth is the negation of the mistake. You are saying, you Tarka, your discourse is a mistake, because you say that logos and being are the same. But my discourse says that truth is the negation of the mistake. So you confirm that truth, what you are saying, is the negation of my mistake. This is not a play of precedent. This, because later in this place, let's express in this, I believe that this is a mystical point of view. For this reason, I believe that Panikkar was perfectly aware of the problem. And for this reason, he continually tried to avoid the contrast with Severino. And in some way, it can appear that he was losing, because he did not win. Since he did not kill, it seems that is, but it's not so. But this is from a mystical point of view. I want to show that because reality is interdependence, there is a point, a magic point, in which logic itself, the logic of the manual of logic, or if you want, the logic of Hegel, coincide, but remaining different, interdependence, coincide with the mystical vision. And that until we separate the logic from the mystical vision, we do not realize the mystical vision. Okay? Recalling Panikkar again, this is one of my preferred quotations. This discourse is 100% logical and 100% mystical.
So it's a clarification rather than a question, because it's a very deep philosophical, logical, you know, question. So I just would like to ask you whether Panikkar's position has any similarity between French philosopher Derrida's position, where there's a deconstruction of the rationality and then moving into a space where the Zen Buddhism speaking about, where you indicated the mystical position, something like that. So if you have something there.
Thank you. In an extremely synthetic way, I think they are really near for some aspects. I have wrote something that I didn't read. Derrida deconstruct identity, every identities, and this is very interesting. I believe that Panica should agree with this move, deconstruct every identity. First difference, Panica in some sense says what he wants to say, mystical sense of life. He say it in the way he can say it, paradoxical, mystically, and so on. But he tried to say, to communicate it to other people. I have the impression, but here we should open a chapter on Derrida, that Derrida hides his real purposes. He doesn't say it. Truth is not said, but this is a very difficult question. I add this point. The problem, in my opinion, is that Derrida treats identity as the problem. So Derrida, as the whole contemporary philosophy, I think Wittgenstein, Terry Cavas now is not no longer here, but Wittgenstein, do not address the question of the negation, of the undeniability of negation. So his play of deconstructing identity has some limits. Briefly, I think that for certain reasons the two positions are similar. Yes. Nevertheless, in the substance, they are different. Because Panica, in some sense, say this is the way. He says, not this, my, it is the way, but he says, I don't want you in an interview, I don't want you follow me. I want you to be inspired by my walking, and you yourself make your walking. Nevertheless, he get up and begin walking. And he says his position, tempiternity, cosmological vision, and so on. Derrida not, and for this, in this sense, I believe that Derrida remains philosopher in a limited sense, while Panica is completely philosophy, 100% philosopher, but is wider than philosopher. So I think we agree. Only that we have to think about this wider. And briefly, my position is that wider means that there is something that is different. The wider is different from the smaller. If we think that every difference is negation, then we fall in the small. And this, you know, you talked before, is the principle of Spinoza, Parmenides, Spinoza, Hegel, omnis determinatio est negatio. Until we think within this net, we cannot make the step that Panikas do, go beyond this net.
Only simple words. Panica also said, answering, what's truth? Truth, what is truth?
What is truth?
Truth is what we are looking for, not what we find or we think we have found. Doesn't it?
Yes. I have nothing to add to this. Only another, it mi è venuto in mente, it's come in my mind, this other reflection. Somewhere Raymond says truth is a relation. It's not a fact, it's a relation. And it is interesting to understand that love too is a relation. And this is not a case, an accident. Truth does not exist if not in comparison with non-truth, with what is other respect to truth. And so I think truth is love. No, this is sounds as a reclam, as a cause. Truth is love, but this has to be thought, really thought. Can I love my enemy that is trying to kill me, and so on? Yes, true is what you are looking for. For he says also, peace. We cannot give peace in another book. We cannot give peace. We can accept peace. So we have to transform radically our conception of truth. Yes, I believe this. I, in a brief word, I think, and this is, was the sense of what I was saying to you, that the Panikkar is a great philosopher, beyond other things, not because I am here, but because he has transformed the whole field of notions. Truth, etc. He does not say the truth is not that but that. It's not this but that. Speaking, talking with Severino too, he says true, that, this, that, but he transforms, he modifies the notion of truth. Okay, so this what you say is a wider contribution to this re-elaboration of the notion of truth. Thank you.